Tony, are you with me?
Yeah, let me get my headphones on.
All right.
All right, talk.
We're live.
Oh, hi. Hi. Sorry.
That's all right. Let me do let me do my intro real quick and we'll get going. Welcome, friends, to Indy's Local Flavor. I'm your host, Joe Carney. Please visit my sponsors, and they'll be sure to treat you right. Make sure you visit my buddy, Josh Cones at Race Gilman in Greenwood. If you're in need for a car, he's the man to call. His number is 317-665-6559. Once again, Josh Cones, Race Gilman in Greenwood. They can get any maker model for you. They'll work with you if you have a credit issue. His number is 317-665-6559 and say, Joe from Indy's Local Flavor sent you. Also, make sure you visit my buddies. If you need a service on your car, it's Jones Family Auto. You can call Mike at 317-897-7724. My buddy Johnny Black at 765-647-2825. Once again, that's Jones Family Auto. If you're needing great repair, man. They're very solid. They have all the certificates that you need. Call Mike or Johnny. Mike's number is 317-897-7724 or Johnny Black at 765-647-2825. Also, I was there last night. If you haven't been there and you like Asian food like I do, make sure you visit Yin Ching. The fastest luncheon and dinner carryout is available. The restaurant is featuring the Northern Peking and Sichuan-style dishes. They're closed on Monday, so don't go there on a Monday. But Tuesday through Sunday, you can get lunch starting at 10 and then dinner from 5 to 10. And then the day they're closed early is Sunday for dinner, 4:30 to 9:30. Their address is 4512 East Washington Street, Indianapolis, 46219. Phone number 317-899-3270. You can visit their website at www.yinchingking, which is yinchingking.com. They will deliver, but you have to have a minimum order of $50, and it has to be 5 miles. And if you're a student, you can get 10% off. Also, I'm a regular here. It's Giacomo's Pizza. You can visit their website, giacomopizza.com, JACKMOpizza.com, or they also have a Facebook page, facebook.com, Giacomo Pizza. They're on the north side in Fourth Bend, 317-986-4545. They're also in Irvington on the east side, 317-356-6612. Or they're also in Greenwood at 317-883-8993. Their hours are 11 to 9 for carryout and delivery. And if you're on the east side at the Irvington location, make sure you say hello to Katie, Liz, and Mike. And this episode is brought to you exclusively by The Danger Room. 833 East 53rd Street, Anderson, Indiana, 46013. Their email is office@danger-room.com. And that's this episode's brought to you exclusively by The Danger Room. Special thanks to everyone who listens in America on Anchor, iTunes Podcast, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Blowhorn Podcast, and Player FM. I'd like to, I'm heard worldwide in England, Ireland, Germany, Australia, Botswana, Africa, Israel, Sweden, and the Netherlands, South Africa, and now we've added Ghana. That really blows my mind. I love all you guys. My charity that I support, my buddy, I don't know if you remember Rick Carmack, Anthony, our residential assistant there at Ball State. Please visit Hope for the Day. That's myhftd.org, Harold Frank Tango Delta.org. Rick Carmack's daughter a friend of mine from Ball State alumni, his daughter by the name of Addie has the courage to tell her story of battle with mental illness to shatter the silence in our community. You can share an impact. Please visit my.htfd.org. It's okay not to be okay. Please donate to a great cause. Thank you. My guest today is, I was thinking right before we came on, we've known each other for a long time. My buddy, my college roommate, Tony Lakis. And my first question for you, we went to high school together. I was a year ahead of you at the original Anderson High School. You won. Tell me your experience with the Anderson High School swim team, please.
Oh, my goodness. Where to begin?
Yeah.
And talking about my college days, I don't remember much. It was just a complete blur.
Okay, well, I can fill that in for you. That's fine.
Computer, vax lab, shouting and singing in the room. You know, it was a complete, yeah. I just remember what room we were in at the time.
Yeah, right.
Well, okay, so, yeah, the Anderson High School swim team. I joined on a dare. Okay. Buddy of mine. When I was in a gym class for the normal swim classes that you had to have, buddy of mine, I started making little wisecracks about, well, swimmers aren't real athletes, blah, blah, blah. Talked a bunch of squat. Then we dared each other to go out for the swim team, and he lasted like two practices. And I just thought I'd get past this week and secure my spot on the team, right, and it would get easier. But I was so wrong.
However,
after the first week of hazing and everyone basically dropped out, we started with like 40 people, and then we got down to like 23 or 24. They dropped like flies. But yeah, we kind of did it on a dare. I approached the swim coach and told him I was trying out for the team. He kind of snarked at me, Jim Alexander.
Sure.
And in front of the class that I was taking, he said, take off your earring and cut your hair, because I had hair down past my shoulders and, you know, old 80s rocker. And I took my earring out in front of the class and dropped it in the metal trash can. It made a clunk. And everybody in the classroom looked at me like, ooh, what did you do? And after that, I came back with no earring, had my hair cut, started. And then, of course, the first week, I was like, I just have to make it here. And then everything said, no, it was so much harder.
Right. Well, I mean, what was it like getting up at like 4:30 or 5?
Oh, geez. Well, for the first 2 years, I didn't drive. And right. I lived about a mile and a half from Anderson High School. So right. Getting up in the morning, I would grab like a bowl of cereal that my stepmom laid out for me the night before.
Right.
And then I would walk in the middle of winter to school, because you had to walk because I was too close for a bus anyway.
Oh, interesting.
And every morning there was a train that went by through the train tracks around by my house, and it had to slow down for this big curve. Now, I don't suggest doing this at home, but I was daredevil and all that noise.
Yeah.
So I would hop the train, and it would drive me from my street, and I would drop off, and I would drop off there in the church parking lot.
Right.
So I wasn't seen dropping off in the middle of the high school parking lot, because that train went right by our high school.
If you
remember the wigwam there.
Yes. Yes.
It was literally, I could jump off the train and walk into school, but I didn't do that because I'd be caught riding the train. So
I did not know that. That's funny.
Yeah. And so getting up in the mornings where it was hell. Going back, we would go in at, normally we'd start about 5:30, and depending on whether we were doing weights or we were doing a swim, we did it normally 3 to 4 days a week.
Right.
And then we get out, we go to school, shower up, go to school, then come back at 3:15, 3:30, and go till 5:30, 6 o'clock. And, of course, during the winter, it's dark.
Yeah, right.
So I had to make the walk home many times, and, of course, your hair is still wet, so my hair would be frozen to my head by the time I got home. So that was, like, the first.
You refused to wear a stocking cap ever, so.
Oh, I did not wear a cap generally, and I did not wear the rubber swimming cap either. Because it just, yeah, I just thought it made you look silly. So.
So, but, what did you learn from that experience? Because I was in band. You know, I was in band for 4 years in high school, and the first 2 years we won State Fair Band Day back to back, and those 4 years taught me drive, determination, and self confidence. What did you take away from the swim team?
Oh, geez. Well, like I said, I joined on a dare.
Right.
And everyone, even my family, thought I was nuts.
yeah.
And after the first couple of weeks, I thought I was nuts too. But then there was two guys out of our entire our class of 1990 that stayed on the team.
Right.
After the first couple of weeks. And it was one of the guys quit swimming and became a diver.
Yes.
And then the other guy and I were the only two members of our entire class that was swimming. And neither one of us was really a strong swimmer. There was a lot of age group kids that have been swimming all their life. So we were behind all of them. And so we got stuck in the lane with the slow people and we just died. And at that point, it got to the point where I felt like if I didn't show up, I'd be letting him down. So,
well, tell me about the awards you won with the swim team, the total team. Tell me about the awards you won in high school.
Well, let's see here. Well, the team itself won the sectional every year other than my senior year. Mm-hmm. But up until that point, I think they had a 13-year streak. And my senior year, we lost.
To who?
Richmond.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, because our sectionals were held in Richmond. So that was the sectionals. We always placed high in regionals. And most of these are individual awards, mind you. But then the team score is just based like a track and field event. You get so many points for whatever finish you do.
Right.
Double points for relays. And then, of course, we won the state meet 2 years back-to-back. My junior and senior years. I mean, sophomore and junior year, sorry.
What was that experience like?
Oh, it was the first year I was an alternate.
Yeah.
I was still way behind all the people. I didn't think I'd ever swim in the state meet, but I was there trying to keep them calm down and talking to them. And of course there's a lot of, just relaxation techniques and stuff like that before you get into the pool, before you start at that level.
Right.
So I just hung out with them. Now, my junior year, they actually put me, I improved enough to where I could actually be on the medley relay team. And that's the first event. And we weren't expected to win or anything, but when we went in the prelims, we placed eighth, which I think it was eighth place, which is the last place you could be in the finals.
Right.
Because they only have eight lanes. So we barely made the finals. And on the next day, we swam and we actually placed fourth. So we jumped up four places from our prelim finish.
Okay.
And then the four of us looked at each other and realized there was only one senior on the team on that relay. And we looked at each other and we said, we're going to win this next year.
Yeah.
We're just going to blow everybody away. And we had a very deep team those 2 years. We had the class before me was all age group swimmers, and the class behind me was all age group swimmers, which made up the bulk of the team. And again, 1990 was kind of smashed in the middle of those two classes as being just three of us or four of us at the time.
Okay.
So my sophomore year, with such a small class of like three, it wasn't very hard if you excelled at anything to get the standard sophomore award and whatever. So I got the Jack Shear Outstanding Sophomore Award. Now, mind you, there was only like three sophomores on the team.
That's fine.
So
had a 33% chance, yeah.
Yeah, no matter what, you could throw a dart and I had a chance at it, regardless of what I did.
Right.
So, and understand everything that I accomplished, I was behind the gun on both classes, the class above me and the class below me. And that was my junior year when I swam that. And we won the state meet that year because we just had an outstandingly strong team.
Yeah.
I think that year we didn't win an event, but we still won the state meet because we were getting two or three guys into the final. Well, two guys into the finals where the top teams were getting like one. So even if they took first place, we were getting third and fifth, which turned out to be more points than the first place. So it was an interesting way to win.
Do you remember who was favored that year to win?
Let's hear. Oh, we were the sophomore year. We were close with Carmel, right. And not Carmel, Kokomo, uh-huh. and it came down to basically the last event to win. So, okay. And that was the sophomore. That was my junior year. No, that was my sophomore year. Sorry.
Yeah.
And then we won the next year. I think it was South Bloomington because they had like four members of the Puerto Rican national team and they won nearly every event they swam in.
Bloomington South, right.
Bloomington South. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They had like four guys that was on the actual Puerto Rican national team was like studing over. And these guys were just, you know, they are Olympic level athletes.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And they had all the international rules down. There were some different rules that they could go by that we didn't. In the backstroke, you could literally, we didn't train this way, but you could literally jump in the water and stay submerged and just whip your legs and stay almost all the way across the pool without even coming up.
Right.
And that was interesting to see because you're a lot more sleek and faster under the water.
Sure.
So he tore it up. But they won most events. But again, like I said, we were getting more people in. They only had like the four guys that was winning every event. So we topped them just because of sheer number of people in the events themselves.
Okay. So with your swim team success, how did that translate to you in later life, either in college or your business?
Well,
your business career.
Yeah. My senior year, we didn't win the state championship.
Right.
But remember those four guys that said there was only a senior leaving and we're going to win it next year?
Right.
We literally won it that my senior year, the medley relay was state champions. We beat out Carmel by one-tenth of a second.
Oh, wow.
And we were the only team to lead Carmel that year because we won the first event. They blew out everyone and won that year.
And Carmel's like a monster in swimming.
Oh, they're a monster now, from what I understand. Like, super huge.
Yes, they are. Very much so.
Yeah. So.
Very much so.
That was the swimming career in a nutshell.
So, I mean, with that winning confidence, how did that help you later?
Well, I had joined the military my sophomore year for the delayed entry program. So I was already doing boot camp between junior and senior years of high school. So I came back my senior year with rank and boot camp under my belt. So I had gotten a lot of confidence through that. It was actually more of a boost to my swimming confidence than the swimming was my senior year. I was always behind the eight ball. And even when I was with the team,
right.
I was always the second string guy. Even when I'm my senior year, I was still the second string guy. But man, sitting in the lane next to the guys during practice just pushed me to the point where, yeah. So if it wasn't for those guys, I would not have gotten as good as I had. So
tell me what it was like to shave your head.
Oh, Well, it's not just your head you shave.
No, it's the rest of it. I get it.
It is an amazing feeling when you do the full shave. Literally, you shave everything that's exposed.
Right.
Except for maybe your eyebrows sometimes. And
sometimes.
Well, I think I did it my senior year. I can't remember. But my senior year, before I got in there, I got a mohawk.
Right. I remember.
At my junior year, my senior year in high school. And then after the preliminaries, then I dyed it blonde and shaved it down a little bit, but it was still like tall. Like if I had some hair product in it, I could stand it straight up and look like the exploited sticker.
The punk, right.
Yeah. And then, of course, when we went to the state meet, I shaved it down to where you could just see it, and it was just a blonde stripe. And then I kept this little part on top really long that could reach down below my head like the Misfits.
Of course. Glenn Danzig, correct.
Yeah. And it was down over my face, and then I shaved everything but this little line across the top of my head that would come down over my face.
I see.
So I was like being creative with hair cutting.
the punk look.
Yeah, but when you shave, when you shave your face, you can feel it's sensitive, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So what we do is we shave our entire body except for everything that's exposed pretty much. And I attempted to razor burn myself a little bit. I pushed down a little bit harder.
Oh, no thanks.
And so it got even more intense. And then the crazy part is then we took this stuff, and this is funny, it's called Time Off Motion Lotion.
Okay.
And it was like a mix between Bengay and baby oil.
No thanks. Okay.
And you slather that on, except for the insides of your arms and the tops of your legs where you need more friction to push the water.
Right.
And when it's warm and everything else, then you jump in that cold water and it just wakes you up.
Yeah.
All your muscles start twitching. And so it's an experience that's the best I can describe it as.
Okay. That's pretty descriptive. No, thank you. I'll pass. Yeah. I'll take another Uno card. I'll pass on that one. No, thank you.
All right. Moving on.
So let's
move beyond swimming there.
Certainly.
Oh, I was recruited by Ball State, but 3 weeks in, I tore my rotary cuff, and I couldn't be competitive any longer.
I remember that.
That was devastating.
You were very upset about that, I remember. I remember the first time. This isn't athletic related. The first time I met you, you lived at your grandfather's house for a while.
Oh, yeah. And I moved out my sophomore year and moved into my grandfather's place.
And we played Dungeons and Dragons at your grandfather's house a couple times. And
now you're bringing that out. Great.
What's the matter with that? That's how we started hanging out.
Yeah.
So, it's true. And then another time we were hanging out, I think. Yeah, David Main, my buddy from band, was in that group. And then we went over to his house in Edgewood and played Dungeons & Dragons. And that's where your gaming really started, right?
Quite a bit before that, actually, because I was doing it slightly before high school. But, I was always willing to get it. A friend of mine... And I also opened up a little business that we were starting. So it was the start. It was called the Fantasy Gamers Guild. And basically people paid us. And we went out and bought you the book and got you a miniature. And then it was like so much money per session so that we could keep buying new materials. So that's where my business thing started, was running Dungeons & Dragons games for money. Can you believe it?
Oh, you're paying for sessions like a psychologist. That's interesting.
Yeah, it went for a couple sessions, and then of course life and time got away from us, and girls and swimming and
I hear you. So So we remained friends through Anderson High School, and then we both, I went to Indiana State for a semester, and I was a year ahead of you, and then we ran into each other at Ball State. So yeah. You, I don't remember this guy's name, but your first roommate at Ball State was a
huge oh my gosh.
Your first roommate at Ball State was a huge Beatles fan, which drove you bananas.
Oh, you don't understand.
I'm listening. Go ahead.
You don't understand. Oh, no. No. I'm sorry. This is an unpopular thing, but I really am not a fan of bands that formed and broke up before or shortly after I was born.
And that's fine. That's fine. I get it. So you don't like Jimi Hendrix then?
Well, no, I said most.
Okay.
I said most, but, you know, Jimmy fits right into my current taste of music.
Right.
Well, kind of like a grandfather of some of it. But
I see.
But you always have to pay respect to the classics of your genre. Come on now.
Right. So my sophomore year, I was rooming with Phil Odenkirk. And he is the brother of Bob Odenkirk, who is best known for as being an actor on Better Call Saul.
Oh, really?
Yes, Bob Odenkirk. He was also at the time I was rooming with Phil Odenkirk of Chicago. He was a writer for Saturday Night Live.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah. So Phil moved off campus. You didn't want to hang around with the Beatles fan anymore. So he said, hey,
let's be roommates. He also sleptwalked. One day he scared the crap out of me. I was asleep and he was trying to climb up in my upper bunk. And I swear I kicked him square in the chest. And he landed flat on his back like it was something out of a comedy series. And he landed on his back. And I rolled over, flipped on the light next to the door, and I looked at him. He was like with his eyes wide open, lying flat, and I was back going.
I slightly remember that, and I'm like, wow, you gave him a karate kick to the chest. Wow.
Oh, yeah. After that, I was pretty much done. I was like, okay, when he goes to sleep, I'm just going to stay up and hang out in the Vax lab, and then that's where I got addicted to, like, the early multi-user video games that were all done in text.
Which became the internet.
Yeah. We were playing around on the internet before there was an internet.
Correct.
A true internet, because the only places that we could connect to was other schools. So we could literally dial up to IUPUI and Indiana University, Purdue. There was a lot of them that we could connect to, but that's where you went.
Right.
And everything was text too, or ASCII. Every bit of it. So no mouses, no Mises,
nothing. To pieces, right.
Yeah, no Mises to pieces.
Right. So, let's see. So my junior year, which would have been your sophomore year, when we start rooming together, and your dad came over and built us bunks, the really high bunks.
The loft.
Yes. And at Ball State at the time, the dorm rooms were not the greatest. There was no air conditioning, no cable.
Old La Follette.
Which is now demolished.
They were demolishing it when I seen some pictures of it the other day. I was kind of sad.
But... Yeah, that's no more. I went up there for my 20th reunion, and I wanted to go see the room. We were in the farthest.
Yep.
Room
both sides
on the north side, on the east side of the wing, and
facing the arena.
Right, the new Worthen Arena that they built for the Cardinals basketball team, and So all we really had were the two beds, and then we had this funky 70s couch, and then we had a TV.
Now that was the senior year. That was my junior year. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So So that's all we had was the funky couch, and then we had a TV that we played VCR tapes on, whatever.
I had a killer stereo.
Correct.
My old Correct. Fisher stereo could boom the place pretty well.
And we got in trouble once for playing Public Enemy. Yes.
Yes, yeah. that was bad.
It was ridiculous because, you know, after 12 o'clock every day, everybody would have the battle of the stereos. And mm-hmm. we'd played that game one time and got in trouble. And I'm like, get out of here.
Go ahead.
Well, it was interesting because we were in the area of music of I'm drawing a blank on alternative, when alternative really came to
the
forefront, and
Nirvana hit right when we were going in school,
right? So you didn't really go that direction. Mm-mm. And I didn't really go that direction because you were into your metal, and you pretty much taught me about hard rock and heavy metal. And then I was doing the hip hop thing, and I had no desire to follow Nirvana, Pearl Jam, and Soundgarden.
Yeah, I think we totally missed that whole bandwagon. Although you are the one who got me to at least listen to Public Enemy, and then I know your other band was Rush. And
yes,
I always thought Rush was my dad's band because he'd listen to it along with Kansas, because Carry On, right. I have it in my head forever because that was the one he'd play for hours on end on his little 45. But and then of course what sealed it for me is when Public Enemy and Anthrax got together and redid Bring the Noise.
Right.
And then I started buying all the Public Enemy stuff.
Right. Yeah, and the thing that bugs me about classic hip hop is all those classic hip hop bands. Well, you know, nobody's touring right now because of the obvious answer there. But if you take that, let's go back to last year when everything was normal. Those classic hip hop bands can't tour in America because they have to make money. They have to go over to Europe and tour. And that drives me bananas. So, yeah. Because, I mean, every time the Public Enemy is still releasing albums. Every time Public Enemy releases an album, it's number one in England. Every time.
You know what? And my genre is just the opposite, because everything good now is coming out of Europe.
Yeah.
And of course, when I find them, they're like one or two albums into their career and they can't even come over.
Right. Yeah, well, because I learned Led Zeppelin from you, Anthrax. I learned Anthrax really from you when they were doing the Judge Dredd theme.
Oh, yeah, because you were heavy into comics.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You really loved it. You loved the comic stuff. I was not as much into it as you were.
Right. So I learned about Anthrax from you. Let's see who else. We both love the Metallica and Justice for All album.
Yeah, and, Black and, not so much.
Yeah, not the same. And then you had the Faith No More CD and
Accept.
Yeah. So you're definitely on the metal, and of course, you know, I think I made you somewhat of a Raiders fan because they play the song Crazy Train at every Raiders game by Ozzy Osbourne and Randy Rhoads.
Well, yeah, and I bought a Raiders jacket.
Yes.
I bought a very stupid, expensive Raiders jacket, and I think it was like $200 back then, and I'm like, why did I even get this? Oh, it was a gift.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh my God. And I wore it everywhere. And then in hindsight, I'm like, I never even watched a Raiders game.
Well,
I really didn't care. Talk about being slave to fashion.
Well, the other thing
you're lucky I didn't go out buying large clocks and putting them on bicycle chains. You know?
Yeah. Flav is insane. So there you go. He's just insane. That's all there is to it. So the other thing that I noticed when you were at Ball State that I thought was bizarre, the coldest of the coldest day, it's like you were from Wisconsin. It could be minus 30 wind chill. You'd be wearing shorts and a trench coat. And I'm like, are you from Green Bay, Wisconsin? What's going on here?
No, I just walked back and forth to school uphill both ways in the winter and in the dark for 2.5 years.
Well, I walked home.
And rode trains. So.
Well, fair enough. Well, I mean, I walked home for my freshman year from the old Anderson High School to Park Place. So I hear you. So that was in the evening. So I
had my early trainings my first 2 years of high school. So cold does not affect me. Something my grandfather and I always would say is that I'd rather be cold than hot. Because if it's hot, you could be buck naked in the shade with iced tea and still be hot. If you're in the cold, you could always put on a heavier coat or stay inside.
That's true. So what are your best memories of Ball State?
Oh my gosh. Like I said, it was all a blur. Let's see here. Memories. Well, I didn't do dating or girlfriends because I was engaged at the time, which was a big letdown. And basically we figured out how to break the Ball State computers, which was pretty funny. There was a game called Mud, and you could type in commands,
right?
Like pick up coin or move south or whatever. Yeah. So we get 20 guys into the Vax lab, and then we'd all initiate the same command on a 3-2-1 drop.
Yeah.
And then we just start hitting the button really fast. We could bring down the whole Ball State Vax system. We got in trouble for that once.
You think?
and we never did it again.
You think? Crashed the system. Yeah. That's always fun.
Oh yeah. So we were kind of, my group was the CS people, computer science.
Right.
And the very smart folks. I always try to surround myself with the smarter folks.
Right. Sure.
But I remember we would listen to, like I said, the Public Enemy Anthrax, and we would get loud in there.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember the windows rattling.
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
And that was crazy. The snowball fight. Joe, how did we forget about the snowball fight?
I wasn't in it.
Oh, my God. A spontaneous snowball fight happened.
Right.
We were out playing football in the snow in the field right outside of La Follette next to the arena. And there was a whole bunch of us there. And it turned out being Hurst versus Botsworth. I can't remember the two halls.
Yeah.
And we were playing football, and then it turned into a snowball fight, and then people just started pouring out of La Follette and joining the snowball fight. And I'm not kidding. There were several hundred people with us. And then, of course, we left La Follette and started walking down. And then we went to the other dorms and shouted at people and started throwing snowballs at the building and hitting their windows. And they would come pouring out.
Right.
And I don't know how many people were there. I have no idea. But we kept marching to every dorm on campus and rallying people up. And I swear there were 1,000 or more by the time we were done. And then, of course, all of us dorm people, we were like, well, we woke up all the dorms. We're going. And then we said, let's go to frat row.
Oh, yeah, I definitely wasn't part of that.
And, of course, all of us went down to frat row, and we just started pelting these houses. Perfect. And it got out where the frats came out, and they were just, like, livid. And they were, like, throwing to hurt people,
right. Yeah.
And then damage happened to them, and then the police showed up and dispersed the crowd. I was like, get the out of here. I think a couple people were arrested for a snowball fight.
That's called get the hell out of here.
Yeah. We're lucky they didn't bring down the water cannons on us in the middle of winter. It would have been bad. But so, yeah, that was something that was crazy. That's probably one of my most crazy memory of just how that spontaneously started with like 50, well, about 25 of us. And it just went from our dorm all the way through campus to frat row.
Well, I was at Ball State when they made it to the Sweet 16, and I didn't go downtown for that because they were firing fireworks into the crowd.
So, oh yeah, they kind of destroyed some of the stuff in the village too.
Oh, heck yeah, yeah. They, you know, it was a cold, rainy March day, and everybody ran down there, and I'm like, nope, I'll be right here when you get back.
Yeah, that was the year before I arrived, and then they were building that new arena the year that I arrived.
Right, right, and it was hot that year.
Oh, yeah.
Very hot.
Especially when you have a creepy roommate. My freshman year.
The Beatles fan. We'll just call him Ringo.
The sleepwalker.
Yeah, we'll just call him Ringo.
Yeah.
let's see what else.
Well, also, the Wizard's Keep, downtown Muncie.
I might have been there once.
Yeah, we played my CS group and I. That's where the gaming really got big.
Right.
We did BattleTech, Robotech. Right. The biggest one we played was Starfleet Battles, which in fact is the most complex game known to mankind. Literally, if you stacked all the rule books on top of each other, they would be 4 feet, 5 feet tall, and they're all set up in like military organization where you have paragraphs and numbered paragraphs and then numbered paragraphs with decimals after that. So it was insane. But we played a lot of Starfleet. That was a lot of fun. But that's then of course the Wizard's Keep was the place we could walk down there and pick up the gaming stuff. And then of course there was a comic book store that was in the river area. I forget what it's called, River Plaza. And that was Bob's.
That's Comic Book Castle.
Yeah, Comic Book Castle. Right. Yeah. And they were separate, games and comics. Back then, too, games and comics were completely separated. There was not many, if any, comic book stores that sold games off the rack, like role-playing games, and there wasn't role-playing game stores that sold comics off the rack. It wasn't until later did that happen.
Right. So I found a picture of you at my graduation in summer 93.
Oh, so, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the last. That was the last event that my grandfather, my mom's dad, made it to, was summer 93. So that has very special memories for me. So I graduate, and, you know, I did the radio thing for WCRD at Ball State, which was fun. It was dorms only, and that was a lot of fun. Interviewed a lot of people for WBST, and that was fun. So I graduate from Ball State. Oh, your degree, by the way, at Ball State was anthropology, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Well, that was my major. I never graduated. I stopped after 93, went out and got married, and then started working in factories. It's been downhill since then.
So time passes, so you call me. I graduate in 93. Time passes. You call me.
Yeah, in 95.
Summer of 95, and say, hey, you know, I need you to help me with comic books. And I'm like, what do you mean?
Dude, you're a comic guy.
Yeah, well, yes. I know my comic books. I'm not.
I got this crazy idea.
Yeah. I'm not.
Wouldn't it be cool if.
Yeah. You know, me and Craig Johnson, we trade ideas, so, you know, we know our comic books. So you call me and say, hey, you know, I need your help with comic books. I'm like, I'm listening. So my dad says, after I'm doing right, doing, you know, nights on WLBC, my dad says, you need to go out and get a second job. And I'm like, okay. So yeah, he called me and said, let's do the comic book thing. I said, well, I looked around at a comic book distribution and the price was bananas. So,
well, we also had two distributors then.
Right. So what we ended up doing is we went to the Indianapolis Comic Book Show and we bought some leftover bulk comic books and put them on the rack. And that's how it got started.
Yeah. And what we did was, remember when I said how comic book stores and game stores did not, you know, commingle?
Correct.
That was my crazy idea. Was it's kind of like Reese's peanut butter cups, you know? You know, like chocolate and peanut butter. Who would have known that that would have been such a popular model or a popular, you know, candy? Because the model took off shortly, you know, around the time that we were doing it. There was a lot of other little stores across the country kind of experimenting with this game called Magic the Gathering.
Right.
And that's how they got into the gaming. But I was already into Magic, and I kind of said, I want to make a comic game store equally. I want them to both be equal partners in it. So that's how we fused them together. We were one of the leaders or the first stores in the country that actually did it like a major part of the business both ways.
Right. And if we would have been in Indianapolis, I think we would have had quicker success than what we did.
Oh, it took a while for us to get there.
Oh, but, yeah.
Well, yeah, because you didn't have, you had, like I said, game stores and comic book stores. You had the Game Preserve and a few other places, and then you had Downtown Comics
and Comic Book Carnival.
And those were like the two, and those were chain stores in Indianapolis, but none of them, they didn't mix the two, you know?
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I remember, we finally ended up going with the big distribution company for the comic books, and I would, you know, I would order from that, and
we actually split our orders with another local store so we could get Marvel, because we were Diamond.
Yeah,
Diamond, and we could get DC and all the independents from them, but Marvel was all, we're going to do it on our own, and they had their own distribution. So we found another comic book store to where we would order for each other, then trade.
Right. So, I mean,
at least in the beginning.
Right. And then later we went and ordered everything. But I mean,
ordering was so awful.
Yes, back then.
We had the catalog. You know, first we got this huge magazine that probably had 300, 400 pages in it every month.
Right. Yeah, correct.
And complete color pictures of everything you could order. And then they had this little supplement booklet, right?
Yep.
And you had a line for every item. So you and I would have to sit, and you could finish. You and I would have to sit, and
we would debate what we wanted.
Oh, yeah. We get red-faced about a couple of them. You don't want that silly bad girl comic book. You know, I was really into Dawn. Well, you and I are both into Dawn.
But, oh, yeah. Joseph Michael Lisner, right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I still have all my stuff I bought. That's one of the things I've kept from my experience in the industry completely. But, yeah, it would take us 2 days.
Easy.
Because we did it all by pencil. Then you'd have to mail the silly thing in.
Right.
We're talking 1995, you know. There was dial-up back then, but it was still like 400 baud. It would have taken 6 weeks for it to download, so you might as well throw it in the silly mail. But, yeah, we would have to go page 332, line five, and we have to go look at it, and we go, oh, there's one book. Okay, we need to order, where's the line in the master sheet? There it is. Now click it off on here. And then we light it out, and the envelope was like
huge. Thick. Yeah. Do you remember the time we went up to Chicago for the convention? Hello? Are you still with me? Hey, Tony. Tony, are you still with me? Looks like we lost Tony. So, today's show has been brought to you by the. I lost you, buddy.
Right? Am I back? Am I back?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Pushing buttons, fat finger syndrome. I do that on the computer. I didn't think you could do it on your phone, but apparently I can.
That's okay. I asked you if you remember the time we went to Chicago for the convention.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We got lost.
Yeah. I've been to so many, though, it's hard to separate them. But
Sure.
But, yeah, they held it in Chicago. They'd give you this really awesome comic that was like $200 because you could only get it going to that show. And
right.
We're like, let's go.
Yeah. It was a fun time.
But, yeah, there was a lot of different shows that I went to during my career. It got to the point where I was going to like 3 or 4 shows out of town per year.
Yeah.
And serving on boards and such. But getting back to the comic ordering, though, remember when it started coming out on 3.5-inch floppy disks?
Yes.
Okay, that's when I quit ordering with you because, of course, it required computer knowledge. And, of course, the minute they put that virus on all personal computers called Windows. I used to have all the knowledge I needed to put together a computer, operate it and everything. And then Windows came along and just ruined it all for me. After that, so that's when you were doing all the order basically on your own at that point.
Yeah. Right. I didn't do a lot of that. I did some of that. Didn't do a lot.
Yeah.
So, because I was only there 4 years.
Yeah, right before the big move, basically.
Right.
At the dawn of Pokemon.
Yeah. Yeah, my son used to be all over that.
Yeah.
So.
That was the big thing that put us up to the next level of retailing. Before that, it was nothing but, wouldn't it be cool, and it's cool to be the owner, and didn't make a whole lot of money at all, and
yeah,
you know, wife was getting ticked off, going, "You need to get a job." I'm like, okay, yeah, I do, but I need to learn how to do this first. Yeah. So,
yeah, well, you were really under a lot of stress at that time.
Oh yeah. You put a mortgage on your house and start a business and. And 3 weeks after you're open, you get broken into and half your inventory stolen. So,
I remember that.
And then, of course, the insurance paid out probably 1/10 of what I had in it. And then, of course, for the next 2 years, they wouldn't insure me. So we operated without insurance other than like the liability coverage you needed to be a business. But another break-in or a fire would have totally destroyed us.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Well, yeah. You were talking about stress. That was one of the stresses.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. So, and that location.
Oh, God. Let's not talk about the concrete block. True cinder indeed. Block. Cinder block building with a tar roof.
Yeah.
800 square feet. And the bathroom was like the old-fashioned gas stations where you had to come in and ask for the key and walk around to the back.
Gloom, despair, and agony on me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Gravel parking lot.
Yep.
Craziness. I can't believe that we actually pulled out of there. Well, Pokemon was a great help. And, of course, I went to my first Gamma trade show the year before. And I listened to a couple, you know, older guys who's been in the industry for 20 years. Yeah. And I got the Gospel According to Dave, which is just the business outline that I call it that.
Right.
And it totally changed how I looked at the store, and the business model that came out of it was perfect as far as what we needed at the time. So I had a mentor that took me from "Wouldn't it be cool?" and the Weird Pete from Knights of the Dinner Table, the weird store owner, the comic book guy in The Simpsons. To a real, to what was becoming a real store. So
right. So what are you doing now?
I am a kept man.
I know that.
I've had twin boys 4 years ago. So
correct.
That's a great story. We were fostering for a little while when I moved here to Kentucky.
Right.
I sold the store in 2011 and moved, and I was recruited by an online game store, Troll and Toad. They were the largest online gaming business around. I mean, it basically almost in the world. Amazon was still kind of just getting started. So they weren't selling a lot of games. They were still mainly selling books and music, and you know, eBay was eBay, but online stores, they had been around since 95, and their online presence was huge. They had a 1.2 million square foot warehouse here in Kentucky.
Oh, wow.
Well, they bought an old building, the old greeting card, Air American greeting card building here, in Corbin, Kentucky. So they recruited me, and I worked there for a few years. And then, of course, I found my wife, of course, online, and we've married, and we, at our age, because we're kind of advanced age, we thought we weren't going to have any children, and we started fostering. We had a few foster kids, and then one day, imagine my surprise when we found out we were pregnant. And then we went to the first doctor's appointment, and I was even more surprised. You know, kind of like in all the comedy shows where the guy finds out his wife's pregnant or something, and he just faints and falls over. Yeah, that's about where it was. Sir, are you okay? Sir, are you okay? Smelling salt, eyes barely opening. I thought I heard you say we were having twins.
He just got hit by Dick Butkus. Kapow.
Yeah. And in the intern, after I'd left the company that recruited me, I did a lot of consulting with other would be game and comic book stores. Helped a few open up, got them started, and most of them turned around and never got out of the "wouldn't it be cool" stage.
Right.
And ran them into the ground. They never got to the point where they would either listen or take it seriously that the model had to be maintained. You couldn't just buy all your own stuff.
Right.
Yeah. You know, one of the biggest things, you know, how they talk about, I'm a seller, not a user.
Yes.
That's exactly what happens in our industry so often.
Right.
Is that the minute they get the store, they think they can collect one of every comic book, you know?
Right.
And when it's 400 comic books a month.
Yeah.
And you're only selling, you know, 600 to other people. You're not making any money.
Correct.
Where does your rent come from, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, that's one of the big traps, doing something you love. I always told people that, be careful to make your vacation your vocation.
Right.
Because either way, it could be difficult, you know. But luckily for me, I stopped that about the time I got the wake-up call about how a business actually ran. So that was a very key turning point for me.
Can we need to wrap this up. Can you tell me about why you called me today? Today's it's a special time for the store.
Yeah, this week, August 5th, 2020, is the Danger Room's 25th anniversary. So it's old enough to have graduated college.
True.
It's under its third year of a third ownership, which all the ever since I sold it, it's always been in the employee family. So we initially sold it to one of our comic guys that basically kind of replaced and did your job as far as doing comics and keeping it organized. Right. And then he just recently sold it to the actual store manager I had, Martin Dale, and he and his wife now run it. It's 25 years old and it's still going. Despite the downturn in the economy, the total crash of some of the card games that has come along over the decades, comic books dropped off tremendously. Their popularity in the movies was one thing, but then of course they started digitizing them. So
I'm not a fan.
The collector base is more, what do you call it, casual. You don't have people reading the entire storyline of the MCU anymore.
Right.
Or Marvel, you know, they don't keep track of everything. They might read their one Wolverine book or the one Batman book, but not like our original guys, like Mr. Number One and Mr. Number Two.
In our
list, who basically ordered almost all the Marvel books. You know, those guys are aging out of the system now.
Right.
And we got a lot of younger guys, so we've had to evolve the store many times from just a straight gaming comic book store to we actually bought up a local music store several years ago, and we started doing video games and, you know, used video games, and that became a very popular model after we started that. But that was a evolution, and the board games have picked up. In-store events have always been big as well. So it's moving along. I mean, I think that there are new turns that the industry can take, as long as you stay on top of it and you can change with the growing tastes of the community, then I think you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
But 25 years, long time.
That's great. You can check out the Danger Room at 833 East 53rd Street. That's Anderson, Indiana, 46013. The email is office@danger-room.com. We want to do a tribute of this show to the late John Hart, our buddy, the late John Hartman. Please also check out, I'm also on a YouTube channel called Keep the Nostalgia Alive with my buddy Billy Powell. We do opinion show. Tony, the last show we did was our top 20 cartoons, which was funny. Today's show,
I'd have some strange ones for that one.
I pulled out some obscure ones. Today's show is brought by the letter D for daring, also by Joshua 1:5-8, Psalm 91, and 1 Peter 5:7. And we're praying for the Lord to squash this nasty flu bug already. And I'm Joe Carney for my buddy Tony Lakis. This is Indy's Local Flavor, and I'll see you next time.